to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history once again, this time taking us back to 1992 for the date which is generally recognised as the start of the Bosnian War. This took place during the breakup of Yugoslavia, which, since the end of World War II, had functioned as a multi-ethnic republic under Marshal Tito, who had led partisan forces against Nazi occupation.
At their headquarters in Italy, student nurses of Marshal Tito's Yugoslavian armies parade before wounded partisan soldiers recuperating from injuries sustained in the battle for their homeland. In their struggle against the Germans, these Yugoslav patriots have won some of the most amazing victories of the war. This 13-year-old youngster, wounded in action, carried messages between armies in the front line. Typical of their fighting spirit, these unconquered people board ship to return to the hills of Yugoslavia and carry on where they left off. This group goes to relieve brave Montenegrins, also members of Tito's army, who are being sent to Italy for rest. Their red-starred banner stands for as brave an army of people as you'd find anywhere in this war.
Yeah. During the Cold War, Tito pursued a policy of non-alignment, refusing to submit to Moscow while still maintaining a policy of market socialism.
Training vessel Galeb brings Marshal Tito, Communist President of Yugoslavia, on a short visit to London. The Galeb is unable to take the Marshal further upriver, so he makes the last stage of his journey in the Port of London Authority launch, Nore. Although the Galeb was delayed by fog, the sun shines brightly on London as Marshal Tito gets his first glimpse of the city. Past the Tower of London, the Nore heads towards Westminster Pier. In the shadow of the Houses of Parliament, the launch approaches the pier. Spectators are kept well away from the landing stage as the Marshal steps ashore to be greeted by the Duke of Edinburgh, Mr. Churchill, and the Foreign Secretary, Mr. Anthony Eden, who has recently returned from the United States. Admiral Sir Roger MacGregor is among the distinguished people who bid him welcome. Now the Marshal speaks a greeting to Britain.
I wish to assure from this place the people and leading men of Great Britain, that they should consider the people of my country as their truest allies, because the people of New Yugoslavia are tending to us the same aim as the people of Great Britain.
The Duke of Edinburgh and the Prime Minister accompany the Marshal up the steps of the embankment, where a naval guard of honour is drawn up for his inspection. Strict security measures have been taken to guard Marshal Tito, and few spectators are allowed within the area of Westminster Pier. Thousands of Yugoslavs have been screened by Scotland Yard, and some who are known to have strongly opposed the President's visit are being kept under observation. This is the first time the Marshal has left his own country since he broke away from Communist Russia, and the Foreign Office Secret Service have warned MI5 that there is a very real risk of an attempt to harm him during his stay in Britain. The Duke wears the uniform of an Admiral of the Fleet for the first time for this occasion. The inspection over, the Marshal prepares to leave for a short private meeting with Mr. Churchill. As the Marshal steps into his bulletproof car, a magnesium flare explodes 40 yards from him. A cloud of blue-grey smoke rises, but no damage is done, as the cavalcade, which includes a carload of Yugoslav detectives, makes its way to Downing Street. No spectator, except pressmen and newsreel cameramen, are allowed into Downing Street as the Marshal and Mr. Churchill arrive. Even the location of the country house where Marshal Tito will stay is not known, but inside number 10, the Yugoslavian president can relax in company with the premier. No information is given as to the discussions planned between Marshal Tito and the British government, but it is believed that he has come with three demands: for more aid from the Western powers, for more arms, especially aircraft, and to negotiate for a meeting with Italy over Yugoslavia's claim to the port of Trieste. Later Later, the Marshal, again accompanied by his bodyguard, drives from Downing Street to the Cenotaph in Whitehall. Mr. Churchill makes the short journey on foot. At the Cenotaph, a huge wreath bearing the words, "The President of Federal People's Republic of Yugoslavia," is laid by the Marshal at the foot of the monument in honor of the dead of two world wars. The brief ceremony of homage draws to its close, and the Marshal bids farewell to our heads of state. The policies of our two countries may not run parallel, but it is to our mutual advantage to work more closely together. And Britain gives a warm welcome to the President of Yugoslavia.
Yes, and that President of Yugoslavia would remain the unchallenged leader until his death in 1980.
Have been lost on those present. It was the anniversary of the Allies' victory over Nazi Germany, VE Day. Tito was the last of the leaders of that era. Escorting him on his last journey were the remaining few of the partisans who gave him his victory. They heard one of the committee of Tito's heirs, who will now rule Yugoslavia, remind the world of the country's position. "We will," he said, "remain independent, masters of our own country." Tito had devoted most of his life to that end. For Tito's widow, it had been a harrowing journey. In the heat of the day, she'd walked behind the coffin all the way to the final resting place. Waiting there once again were the world's leaders. Russians stood with Chinese, Iranian with American, monarchs with revolutionaries and dictators. Their differences set aside, however briefly, in a remarkable, perhaps a unique tribute. This is Keith Graves in Belgrade.
Yugoslavia would manage to stay together for around a decade after Tito's death. By the early 90s, however, ethnic conflict had begun to escalate into war, which is generally believed to have begun on this day in history, the 6th of April.
"In a village 2 miles south of Zvornik, we came upon the human calamity which is the practical result of all this. 2,000 Muslims are stranded and struggling to get out. They spoke of the fighting they'd left behind them, the murder and hostage-taking which went with it."
"The terrible things are happening now. They have been happening since 2-3 days. It's a terrible, terrible terror which has been made and which is being made right now. You can hear even now some shells."
"We could, and so could the refugees waiting for rescue. The artillery barrage was creeping towards us in the villages on the Muslim side of Zvornik." "What is happening," she says, "is that we are unarmed and they are firing at us." He begs the world to help them against the aggression of the Serbs and the Federal Army. The cry as we leave is again for help as quickly as possible. And the applause is only because we are the first sign they've had in days that anyone out there cares about their plight. Numbers are difficult to estimate, but in single file on mountain paths and great columns on the wider tracks, it's possible that as many as 20,000 people are on the move, most of them by foot. These had been walking for 2 days. They had gone 18 miles, had at least another 20 to go along this trail of tears. They were heading for the safety of a Muslim area without any help, no food, no medicine, no transport. But all that they were talking about was the actions of the Serbs in their town of Zvornik.
They killed all peoples. Some peoples from the Serbian forces have something like a wire put on the neck and pull.
It is a great and tragic displacement of people, thousands of them being driven from their homes for no other reason than that the Muslims are weaker and the Serbs are stronger, and the ethnic map of Bosnia is being redrawn. The refugees are looking for help to the European community, to the United Nations, and the Commissioner for Refugees. There's not a sign here of any of them. Martin Bell, BBC News, on the road from Zvornik.